Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. No King's organizers say 7 million people in more than 2,700 cities and all 50 states took to the streets on Saturday to oppose Trump's authoritarian regime. In Washington, science educator Bill Nye slammed the administration for rejecting what he called basic scientific facts. Bill Nye says the refusal to promote science is a recipe for failure, harming public health and our ability to address global challenges. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is one of the premier scientific and research agencies targeted by the Trump administration. NOAA provides daily weather forecasts and emergency alerts for hurricanes and other extreme weather events. It also conducts critical climate research, coastal restoration, and fisheries monitoring, both within the agency and through partnerships across the country. Since January, nearly 2,000 NOAA scientists and meteorologists have left through firings, buyouts, or retirements. The staffing shortages have hit National Weather Service's offices so hard that some cannot keep up with 24/7 operations. According to reports, the Trump administration is proposing to eliminate nearly all of NOAA's climate research programs. Trump is also proposing a $4.5 billion cut to NOAA's budget for fiscal year 2026. That's roughly a 30% reduction from the last budget enacted under the Biden administration. So today we'll discuss what's at stake. What will these cuts mean for climate research, public safety, and the country's ability to prepare for extreme weather events? Craig McLean is a former top chief scientist at NOAA. He dedicated his 40-year career to championing scientific integrity, diplomatic collaboration, and marine conservation for the benefit of future generations. Hi, Craig. Thank you so much for your important work, and thanks for joining us again.
Hello, Rose. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I really appreciate how your station reaches out in a very informed and progressive way to your listeners.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot. You know, we've been covering climate issues since the Clinton-Trump election because we felt like these issues just deserve far more attention. And before we dive in and talk about these budget cuts and so many of your colleagues who've lost their jobs, you spent nearly four decades at NOAA. So, Craig, can you just reflect on your time there? What did the agency mean to you personally and professionally?
At a personal level, the agency gave me an opportunity to explore many facets of ocean science, which always fascinated me ever since I watched Jacques Cousteau on television, as I'm sure some of your older listeners might have had a chance to do when they were younger. It was a great recruitment of a vision to take care of the ocean. And knowing the Bay Area, knowing your majority of your listeners are very plugged into this and very concerned about this. It was a calling card. So NOAA gave me an opportunity to enter into this field, and it was not really clear to me how one could enter into this field. What I will share with you is that I was recruited to join the NOAA Commissioned Corps, which is a group of uniformed service officers. We have the same rank as Naval and Coast Guard officers do, and it gave me an opportunity to explore many different facets and areas of the ocean and eventually climate. Mm-hmm. And were it not for that opportunity in this very small service, which used to be part of the United States Navy, I would not have had the career that I did have. I was able to achieve the status of being a commanding officer on oceanographic research ships. I was able to run programs and eventually run the science of NOAA. It's a wonderful agency. It serves the public every day in ways that are obvious and ways that are inconspicuous. Perhaps we could talk about that a bit. But the work of the agency is vital to the health, the safety, and security of the American public, whether it's through weather, whether it's through long-term climate impacts, or whether it's through the quality of the ocean that gives us all the life that we know today.
You retired just before Trump returned to the White House. What has this been like for you and your former colleagues to see people who are so dedicated to these issues leaving, being pushed out, and then just to see what's happening to institutions like NOAA and the EPA?
Well, it's more remarkably depressing. It is emotionally destabilizing for the federal employees, particularly in NOAA, and with further particularity to those areas of NOAA that have been identified by Project 2025 and the president as not being worthy of being retained in the federal government. Yet, when you look at those programs, they are, and I'll use the word again, they are vital to the safety, the security, and the economic prosperity of the country. So the turnabout is very demoralizing. And if I look at the director of the Office of Management and Budget, Mr. Vogt, a fellow who claims to be a Christian nationalist, I easily see the nationalist part of this guy. But I could look long and hard throughout the Bible, Old and New Testaments, and I find nothing Christian about this guy, the way that he wants to cause harm, emotional harm, and debase the level of contentment in life that federal employees have. Federal employees, I have to say, they don't sit at their computer shopping for cars and looking for the next bargain on Amazon. They work very hard. And I was often heard to say, and I will say it again today, that the federal employees I know will crawl across a coal fire topped with broken glass in order to come to work every day. So being on a shutdown or a lapse in federal appropriations is a further demoralizing aspect because all federal employees feel like they're just pawns in this ping pong game between a left-handed and right-handed set of political values. But yeah, it's a very dark time. It's a very concerning time, and I worry about people's emotional health, mental health. And I also worry about the number of folks who have left the agency. 27,000 years of experience left NOAA on April 30th through the early retirements, the buyouts, and people who chose to retire as opposed to risk being fired. And some people stayed, but that many people that had left constituted a 27,000 year experience level that's gone from the agency.
Oh, that's so devastating. So much institutional knowledge. Unfortunately, Craig, I think a moment like this makes us realize what we take for granted. A lot of people really don't know how government functions. People don't know what goes on at NOAA. And I think it's so important to point out that people who work in government are so dedicated to public policy work. They could make more money in the private sector, but they want to serve. And so, can you tell us what does NOAA do? Because a lot of people don't know. A lot of people know about the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, premier scientific and research agency, but beyond the obvious, what else do people at NOAA do?
That's quite a list, Rose, and you could just interrupt me and tell me when to stop. But I'll start at the top in the most foundational elements of NOAA, an agency that was created in 1970, are the Weather Service and the management of our marine areas, which is largely the National Marine Fisheries Service and then also our National Ocean Service. So the weather work has continued and gotten more and more accurate, providing more and more excellence, whether it's rain, inundation, the Pineapple Express, if you will, from Hawaii, bringing rainfall, bringing drought, bringing fires, all those aspects of our seasonal, daily, decadal, and beyond weather forecasts for the American people. We also have then inside of the Fisheries Service, another of the core elements that created NOAA, management of the nation's fisheries and also the United States' contribution to global management of fisheries. Many stocks do not know the geopolitical lines and they transfer and transit well beyond the coastal waters of let's say, the United States. So the U.S., through the Fisheries Service, works internationally to manage stocks of tuna and other resources, but they're resources when they're harvested, but they're also part of a brilliant and beautiful ecosystem when they're conserved and managed appropriately. Other parts of NOAA, including the National Ocean Service, have some very frequently visited and highly valued components of California's coastline and the Bay Area. And that would be first of mention, the National Marine Sanctuaries System, which is a marvelous aggregation of underwater preserved areas, parks that are underwater, that exists to educate people, preserve areas, and that's both natural and cultural. So some of the cultural artifacts and cultural history of America's first people, for example, are part of the most recently designated marine sanctuary expansion in the California area. In addition, in the Ocean Service is a group of the folks who make nautical charts for us. So any weekend boater, any professional mariner, the charts that are made for the United States of America and used by, for example, the Defense Department, every government entity inside the United States and recreational boating users, they're made by NOAA. So we make and produce the nautical charts for the nation. There's also a series of coastal and estuarine areas that are protected. These are the National Estuarine Research Reserves, of which there are many in California. So the Ocean Service also works in measuring the land space of the United States. So every surveyor who's out in America who will need to survey the plat of one's property before the sale of that property, that's a private surveyor that's bringing the knowledge and the measurement of where that land is located and what a person is to buy. But their networks are tied back to the National Geodetic Survey, which NOAA operates and has operated since before it was originally created back to 1917. And this is the national network of survey of land, which ties back to, of all places, the Washington Monument. That is the origin, that's ground zero, the very tip of the Washington Monument. So, moving beyond that, I'll talk about the part of NOAA that I was responsible for running, which is the oceans and atmospheric research portion, and that's what Mr. Trump wants to get rid of in his budget. In 1970, NOAA was created to do three things, as I mentioned: the weather, and understand where and how the weather's generated, fisheries, and manage the nation's marine resources. But also, the third leg was to study the interaction between the atmosphere and the ocean. How does it make weather? How does it make long-term weather? And as we started to study that, we built more ships, we built airplanes, satellites, ocean drifting buoys and monitors and gliders, and the people to staff them, the modelers to take those measurements and understand intelligently what it all means. That's how we get weather forecasts. We don't just look out the window, we run models based on the measurements we make. And we created what we came to understand today as climate science. Back in 1970, climate science was really just a geographic recitation of, for example, at what altitude did bananas grow in Central and South America? That was climate back in 1970. Today, we know it as the Earth science. And NOAA is the agency that tries to manage Earth, our patient, our ailing patient, as we measure the respiration, the blood pressure of our ocean, and also, because we map the ocean and explore the ocean, we're also getting the gray's anatomy of the ocean. So those are some of the many things that NOAA does, and the value to the citizens translates into an economic return and an economic backbone. In the agriculture industry, the seasonal forecasts that are generated so that our farmers and agriculture folks know what to plant when, know how dry the land is going to be, how wet it might be, that city planners, state planners, infrastructure that's built for the nation, we know that tomorrow's rainfall is not going to equal yesterday's rainfall. So the past is no longer a prologue with climate change. And we're able to forecast for the engineering world, for the insurance world and reinsurers, the people who set our rates, how risky is life and the economy going to be for us, whether you live on the coast and suffer the insult of storms, or whether you live in the heartland or in other parts of the country where your weather extremes are becoming more and more obvious to us. So NOAA is in American citizens' lives every day, from the economy and the skill of the science influencing the tightness or the risk or lack of risk in the economy. When we have a lot of uncertainty and a lot of risk, we pay more, whether it's for a bushel of apples, or whether it's for our insurance rates. When we have greater certainty, we can bring those prices and those costs of our living under control. So, knocking out the science that tells us this will cost Americans money, will put Americans' life, safety, and property at risk, and is really the wrong thing to do in order to make this country even stronger.
Today, we're speaking with Craig McLean, former top chief scientist at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He dedicated his 40-year career to scientific integrity and marine conservation for the benefit of future generations. Craig will be with us for about 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions for him, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Yeah. There have been articles about staffing shortages that have hit National Weather Service offices so hard that some cannot keep 24/7 operations going anymore. The Center for American Progress had a piece about how staffing and research capabilities have been hindered, and it's been really hard to prepare for and respond effectively to extreme weather events because of these cuts. What else do we need to know about the cuts and the impact they've had? And then what concerns you the most about further cuts and the possible $4.5 billion cut that Trump is proposing?
Well, Rose, it's remarkably concerning, and that which gives me the most unease are the most immediately delivered services of the agency to the public. When our listeners turn on from your station and others, when you turn on the weather, you're not just getting it from WKAL. You're getting that weather from the National Weather Service, who provides the information, the satellite images, the radar images, all of the reports on what the weather is going to be. And then it's more locally interpreted by the people who live within your community in the Bay Area, as an example. But in not being able to give the best of information, as well as we know we can, is very concerning, because we now start to retreat from that level of certainty and introduce risk into people's daily lives and safety. So I'm concerned about that, but let me bring it up to another level. The ignorance that is profoundly abundant in the Trump administration, so far as the nature of the mission of NOAA, it is profound, it is alarming, it is dangerous. The Secretary of Commerce sat in I believe it was June 4th, testimony before the Senate Appropriations Committee, the committee that under the Constitution controls the money, although I'm very concerned how the Trump administration is clawing back money that's already appropriated. We'll have to wait until that's adjudicated at the Supreme Court, but nonetheless, that's happening, so that even the money that's been produced for the agency, the agency has not been allowed to spend it all. But Secretary Lutnick's ignorance of the NOAA mission is remarkable. It is profound. It is very concerning. And when you have people such as he dabbling in the intricacies of a technical agency to lower the cost blindly, but without considering what and where are the impacts of the reductions that are being made, and how possibly can that agency mission continue to be performed with so few people, and at the level that we know we are capable of delivering to the public, and at the level that the public is used to. So Mr. Lutnick, in his testimony, declared that the National Hurricane Center was as prepared as ever for hurricanes. We know, as a matter of fact, that is completely untrue. Whether he knew it or not raises the question as to the man's integrity. But we know that it was not true. And now there are vacancies that have been posted in order to fill the gaps in not just the National Hurricane Center, but elsewhere. But two points I raise as a concern and best evidence of that lack of awareness, yet that is the person who's controlling NOAA's fate and future. Number one, Mr. Lutnick had previously chastised the agency for buying propeller-driven airplanes to penetrate hurricanes. That's a courageous mission. I have joined the hurricane hunters and penetrated hurricanes. I don't take that lightly. I've sailed through hurricanes on ships, and I've flown through them in the aircraft. I'll take the ship experience over the aircraft. It's very, very amazing, the professionalism of these folks. But they do it with a propeller airplane, because if you took a jet through a hurricane, what Lutnick wanted the agency to do, you're not guaranteed that the airplane comes out of the hurricane. You generally would wind up more with airplane parts, not a full airplane, and the risk to the crew, obviously. The other is that the Hurricane Center was not ready for this hurricane season, and the agency was not ready for this hurricane season with the people who were lost. One could raise the question as to how well were we able to forecast the tropical cyclone that caused such damage to the Alaska community recently. Mm-hmm. But also, you may remember a hurricane down off of Florida, which made a hard right turn. It was called Hurricane Dorian. And Mr. Trump embarrassed himself by drawing a line that he thought was the forecast area, Sharpie Gate, if you remember. But the reason that our weather forecasters, Dr. Ken Graham, who was the director of the Hurricane Center at the time, he's now the director of the National Weather Service, the way he knew that that hurricane was going to turn was because weather balloons were being launched across the country, in Missouri, Montana, in Kansas, in Nevada, everywhere. They were being launched to look at the steering currents of that hurricane. Without sufficient people around the country, we are going to be impacted. And without the discrete knowledge of how to run and where the agency needs are, that causes me great concern. So the politicization of NOAA's programs is my greatest concern.
You brought up Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, and the AP reports that he's a billionaire. He ran a financial firm, which he recently left in the control of his adult sons, that stand to benefit if the Trump administration follows through on a decade-long Republican effort to privatize government weather forecasting. We should also say, according to this piece, Trump's pick to lead NOAA, who was just confirmed, Neil Jacobs, you mentioned him, was chief atmospheric scientist for Panasonic Weather Solutions and has been a vocal proponent of privatization. Can you talk about what would happen if the Weather Service was privatized? And do you think that they'll follow through on this?
Rose, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here. And if you look at the Weather Service operation today, point number one, it is highly privatized in the terms of commercial contractors providing talent to NOAA in order to accomplish the mission, maintaining the radars, building the radars, the satellites, all of the work that's done by engineers who sit at control stations controlling the satellites. These are contractor positions. They're not all federal government. So the private sector is alive and well and thriving in NOAA, point one. Point two, there's a $10 billion industry in aftermarket, if you will, custom weather forecasts. The grape growers in your community, they don't singularly rely on the NOAA weather forecast. There are very talented companies that downscale the NOAA forecasts and give the east side or the west side of your mountain range the forecast that you're going to get. So the private sector is already in there. Mr. Lutnick is looking to monetize anything that the government does to sell it and then make money on it. And there are certain things that just aren't going to be able to be provided by private sector. There is no private sector innovation or encouragement to get into the business of flying through hurricanes. That's a distinctly and discreetly government function. And that tells us where the hurricane's going. There is a desire, and there has historically been a desire, to turn all of the weather forecasting over to a private company. But I think the largest question that prevails there is what liability will that private company enjoy for a mistaken forecast that caused a loss of lives? So the idea to just take something that's been working marvelously well for the American public and decide to privatize it without a real justification, just on the personal belief or the political belief that it would be better for someone to be making a profit on this. I'd rather that the profit be in the hands of the American people, where for 5 cents a day, the American people pay taxes for all of what NOAA does. For about a penny and a half a day, the American people get all of the weather information and climate information that helps them economically and physically during the course of the day. So it's a misguided effort to make money for a few people, not help the American citizen. But I think we're seeing that in many places in the philosophies and the policies of the Trump administration.
Final thoughts, and we'd love to have you back for the full hour.
Happy to do so.
What can people do about this? You mentioned Alaska. We're going to be covering this soon. Yesterday, NPR reported that the remnants of a typhoon have forced over 1,000 people to evacuate rural villages in western Alaska. Many of those leaving are Alaska Native people with generations-long connections to the land. And then this story deserves so much more attention. It's just devastating. This is a Guardian piece. Planet's first catastrophic climate tipping point has been reached, with coral reefs facing widespread dieback. Another devastating piece. And then here you have so many people have lost their jobs in the have been furloughed in the government. But the New York Times reports that federal workers who issue permits for oil, gas, and mining operations are still working. They have not been sidelined under this administration. So given all of this, what can people do who care so deeply about the future of the planet and are very concerned about where we're going?
I think number one, I think a lot of them were heard this past weekend, which what the news is reporting is 7 million number of people that were out at the No Kings demonstration. I live in a congressional district where Congressman Jamie Raskin prevails. I know you have very fine levels of representation out in California. Your member of Congress may already be on the mission to challenge the ludicrous and ridiculous policies of the Trump administration environmentally. It is not, excuse me, it's not a lost cause. In fact, it's very beneficial to write to those members of Congress and to express your gratitude. Give them your thoughts. Let them know they're doing the right thing. And if listeners have representatives who are not on this program, let them know they're going to lose their job if they don't turn around and start to find very good policies that are good for the planet. So people need to continue to be vocal. I think people feel more comforted when they share their frustration and get vocal. So get involved, become part of the community. And if I listen to and I see what your programming is like on WKAL, you are a community radio station. So get involved the way that you do at KALW, and you reach the people. So for the citizen who's frustrated, don't be frustrated alone. Find folks to continue to listen to. Be careful not to dive deep into an echo chamber. We need to listen to what everyone is saying, including the people who are not speaking the truth. And if you run into someone who is just regurgitating the pablum of, let's say, the Trump policy line that climate is not real and many other aspects, challenge them on that. Show them where they're wrong. Do it politely. Do it calmly. And be prepared, because sometimes folks are lost in a cult mindset of their beliefs. But your logic, reason, and evidence can triumph over just the rhetoric or the continued repeating of what's coming from that echo chamber. Don't sit back.
Craig McLean is former top chief scientist at NOAA. He dedicated his 40-year career to scientific integrity and marine conservation for the benefit of future generations. Craig, thanks so much for your work. Thanks for joining us, and we'd love to have you back for the full hour.
Thank you very much, Rosa. It would be my pleasure. Good day
Great.
To you.
Thank you so much. And coming up after a quick break, we will talk about the growing environmental impact of AI data centers in California. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this.